Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, as we've been hearing in the news this morning, Hezbollah has vowed revenge on Israel after at least 11 people were killed and more than 2,700 injured when pagers across Lebanon exploded yesterday afternoon. Those pagers were being used by the militant group to avoid phone surveillance, but it appears they had been modified with small amounts of military explosives. For the latest, we're joined from Beirut by the policy analyst for the International Crisis Group, David Wood, and by the BBC's chief international correspondent, Lise Doucette. And Lise, good morning to you, first of all. This was an attack targeted at Hezbollah on one level, but of course there were innocent people who happened to be nearby, who were shopping, walking, going about their day, and they too were also caught up in these explosions.
Yes, good morning. Well, it's not a very good, it's a terrible morning across Lebanon today. More than 100 hospitals said to be overwhelmed by the casualties. You heard from the health minister. Israeli media are saying this morning that, and of course, this is a time where Israel has refused to say anything to confirm or deny any involvement. That is the way it responds to any kind of overseas operations like this. But it's widely assumed that given the sophistication of this attack, it was its work. That's certainly what Hezbollah is assuming. And Israeli media are saying that the operating idea was that the explosives, there were just a small amount of explosives in these personal pagers, and that the explosives weren't significant enough to cause widespread casualties, that they would be limited. But of course, we've seen the videos now of pagers exploding in marketplaces. We hear they've exploded in the hands of people. That's why there's also a 10-year-old girl who are among the injured. And this was very much, to use the expression, terrible expression, a mass casualty event.
Mm-hmm. And we've heard, haven't we, that the pagers started to beep before they exploded, meaning, of course, that people probably reached for them, which explains why we've been hearing about the injuries to the hands, to the face, to the eyes and so on.
The details are still coming in, but from what we understand, and David may know more, is that these pagers were in a recently ordered batch by Hezbollah. So not everyone would have been using them, and not everyone who had a new pager would have responded to that message. But it seems to have been activated. With people may remember the pagers, it's a very old-fashioned one-way messaging system, that the beep, beep, beep of a message came. It seemed to be from a Hezbollah leader. And yes, when they pressed that little button to see the message, that is, seems to be what triggered the explosions, because they went off simultaneously in many parts of Lebanon, but also in Syria, in neighboring Syria, as well as in Iran, underlining that these pagers were being used across the network of not just Hezbollah members, but also its allies.
Okay, well, David, before we get on to the fallout from this, what do you know about the logistics of this attack?
So in terms of logistics of the attack, information is still coming to light, but it does seem, according to technical experts, that the most likely scenario was that the perpetrator, who we can probably assume was connected to Israel, has intercepted the shipment of pagers before it arrived in the hands of Hezbollah, and has then found a way to trigger the pagers all at once remotely, which obviously demonstrates an incredible level of infiltration of the supply chain for these pages to Hezbollah and the technical capacity to also carry out this operation. The other side of this, of course, which is worrying for the situation in Lebanon and perhaps even more in the region, is that conversely, it's a huge blow to Hezbollah, because it shows the degree to which Hezbollah is exposed as an organization to Israeli intelligence, because not only were these pagers able to find their ways into the hands of Hezbollah operatives, but also the party was unable to detect them before they were detonated, which feeds into a wider dynamic and narrative throughout this conflict, which has continued since last October, mm-hmm. where Israel has demonstrated very impressive intelligence capabilities.
So the capacity and the credibility of Hezbollah are damaged in the aftermath.
So the way in which Hezbollah has reacted in the past to these damaging incidents in relation to its credibility is with relative restraint. So it's become clear this far into the conflict that Hezbollah prefers to avoid a full-scale war with Israel. At the same time, it has made the commitment to its supporters, but also more generally, that it will continue to maintain a support front by launching attacks against Israel across the Israeli-Lebanese border until there is a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. And I don't think that strategic posture will have changed after yesterday's attacks.
Okay, Lisa, to come back to you on that point, it is a provocation, an attack like this, but it is a humiliating demonstration of the Israeli capacity to target Hezbollah, as David has explained there. How do you believe the attack is likely to be viewed with both within Israel and across the wider region?
Well, within Israel, Israelis' first priority is to protect Israel. There still is widespread support for the war in Gaza, which is still the main front. And when it comes to Lebanon, the main concern of Lebanese is that they are sympathizing with the some 60,000 Israelis from the north who were evacuated from their villages and have been living in temporary accommodation waiting for the war to end. And coincidentally or not, the evening before this pager attack happened, Israel added to its war aims that the return of Israelis to their homes was now a war aim, which of course then intensified the speculation that Israel would soon open what has been called since the beginning of the Gaza war, just after the terrible events of October the 7th in southern Israel, is that the second front would also be intensified. And there have been persistent reports that there are senior military officers who have wanted from the very beginning to deal with what they see as the Hezbollah problem once and for all. This is something which alarms the United States. It has been trying its envoy on this file. Amos Hochstein is now in the region trying to, and he has said that he believes there's only a diplomatic solution to both make the border area on Israel's side safer, but also to make it safer for Lebanese on the other side, because they've also had to leave their homes. But efforts have not succeeded. There's been a low-intensity war, if you want to call it, constant exchange of fire across that border between Hezbollah and Israeli forces. And so, therefore, this has just ignited it again and ignited the speculation that there could be a more intensified war in the operation. And of course, across the region, this will just intensify the agony that the only way to solve this, to end the suffering of Gazan civilians, to bring the Israeli hostages home, is a ceasefire. And when the focus of resources and effort and diplomacy now has to shift to another front, it takes away from the efforts to what is in everyone's mind. That's what Iran and its so-called axis of resistance, including Hezbollah, say. If you want to end this, end the Gaza war. Mm-hmm. And indeed, Antony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State, is again coming to the region. He'll be in Egypt on Wednesday. But the ceasefire deal today seems to be even further away.
Okay, and David, to come to you on that, I mean, as Lisa outlined there, and there are numerous reports this morning citing sources both in the United States and in Israel who say that this was the opening move of a wider Israeli offensive against Hezbollah. Is that what you expect to see now?
So there's obviously lots of speculation, and it seems as though lots of actors, both in the region and internationally, were caught off guard by this. But there are several explanations, and one of them, which is plausible, is that this might be the first move in a wider expansion of the war by Israel. As against that, while those fears were running very high last night, as hours and days go by, the surprise advantage, shall we say, that you would expect in that kind of strategic move fades. So I think that while it's distinctly possible, there are other explanations that could explain it. So I've also seen reports that perhaps Israel feared that Hezbollah had started to detect that there was something wrong with the pages, which is another possibility, and therefore felt as though it was better to use that advantage while it was still available to it. There is another, and I think it relates to what Lisa was saying, I'll just conclude on this point, which is that a lot of the struggle between Israel and Hezbollah is psychological. So it is distinctly possible that that kind of operation, which has had a massive psychological impact in Lebanon, was designed to put pressure on Hezbollah to accept a diplomatic solution to the situation at the Israeli-Lebanese border.
Mm-hmm. It says a lot too, doesn't it, about the power, the strength, the reach of Mossad and of Israel?
Oh, without a doubt. And this is something that Hezbollah has been very public about and very open about from the beginning of the conflict. So back in February, the Hezbollah Secretary General Hassan Nasrallah beseeched his the supporters of the party not to use mobile phones. And indeed, it was reported that in July there was an official directive from Hezbollah for its operatives not to use phones in areas of conflict because Hezbollah is aware that Israel has very precise intelligence, which it's been gathering from, amongst other things, conventional phones to carry out targeted assassinations throughout this this latest round of the war. So what it means is that now that Hezbollah's plan B, if you will, which was resorting to these pages, has also been infiltrated, this will really have an impact on Hezbollah's operational capacity and may really impact the efficiency with which it can carry out military operations, given that communications become that much harder.
Do you expect, David, that this event will have a radicalizing or a chilling effect on Hezbollah's recruitment?
So if we think about this in a more long-term way, these kinds of operations by Israel with targeted strikes and assassinations have not typically dulled the enthusiasm of Hezbollah's supporters or impacted its recruitment. So this is not the first time that Israel has carried out targeted operations directed against Hezbollah members. So while there's a lot of anger inside Lebanon now, not just amongst the Hezbollah community, by the way, at the sheer breadth and recklessness of this attack, I wouldn't be willing to bet that this will, in the long term, adversely affect Hezbollah's recruitment drives. And indeed, it may galvanize some of its supporters more to commit to the struggle.
Mm-hmm. And Lise, there's clearly huge concern in the United States about this. I just saw their reports that the US Defense Secretary spoke to Benjamin Netanyahu twice yesterday, which, although not unprecedented, is very unusual, isn't it?
There's been, the telephone lines have been burning for many months now between Washington and Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. Senior U.S. military have made it clear, in fact, everyone right up to President Biden, they believe the time is right for a ceasefire. Senior Israeli military officers have been saying, including the defense minister, very publicly saying that time is now to do a deal to bring the Israeli hostages home. We have achieved our military objectives. And there's such a stark contrast between the stunning successes of Mossad, able to carry out these kind of intelligence operations to spectacular effect, and then the war which grinds on in Gaza, and the reports that we get that no sooner do Israeli forces pull from an area that Hamas fighters reclaim them again. So there is a growing sense, and the Americans have joined this course to say, let's now look at other ways to deal with the military threat from Hamas, rather than continuing with a war which is causing so much hurt, and indeed they believe will hurt Israel in the long run.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us. BBC Chief International Correspondent Lise Doucette and David Wood, who is Policy Analyst for International Crisis Group based in Beirut. I just want to bring in some news. I told you that press conference, which is being led by Europol, is ongoing as we're on air this morning. It involves many international law enforcement agencies. But our own Paul Reynolds reports now that Gardaí say they've seized 42 of these so-called ghost encrypted devices as part of the international investigation, which infiltrated an encrypted messaging platform for criminals. So the new information is that they've seized over 15 million euro worth of cocaine, cannabis and heroin. There have been 11 people arrested. We're going to bring you more details from that press conference. The operation is a joint operation called Operation Kraken, involving the FBI, the Australian Federal Police, the Canadian Mounted Police, the French National Gendarmerie, gendarmerie and the Gardaí. So more information coming across the morning on that. Now, though, we'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.